Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to What is Etiquette Anyways, the talk show, where we are making the world a polite place to live. We discuss a variety of topics and always enjoy interacting with our listeners. You may join the conversation live by calling 516-418-5894 or email your questions or comments to missdonnaspeaks@gmail.com. You may join the conversation live by calling 516-418-5894 or email your questions or comments to missdonnaspeaks@gmail.com. Now here's your host, John Maxwell, certified speaker, 25 plus years, master trainer, and coach, Miss Donna.
Well, good evening. Happy Sunday. Happy Black History Month. As you can hear, it is a celebration. And we would love to have you join us for this celebration. Today is Sunday, February 19, 2023. We are broadcasting live from the wonderful city of Atlanta. Again, happy Black History Month. Well, since the name of our show is What is Etiquette Anyway, I always like to start by answering that question for those of you who may be new and joining us for the first time. And if that's the case, welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm Donna. Thank you so much for choosing to spend a little time with us this evening. Etiquette is simply a set of rules of behavior. And by using these rules, people make living with each other more pleasant and comfortable. Now, I don't know if that's what you want or not, but I know it's certainly what I would like. Okay? The word etiquette itself comes from an old French word meaning ticket. It later actually came to mean a prescribed routine, especially of court behavior. Now, Charles I and II of England copied the rules of etiquette from the French court. And you know what? These rules became requirements of behavior everywhere. Kudos to Charles I and II for that. Okay, again, it technically is Black History Month, and I say technically because we do know that although February is designated as Black History Month, we know that we celebrate Black History 365 days of the year. And so with that known, you know, we do want to just take some time since it's a designated month, if you will, and talk about it. You know, oftentimes we may hear about, you know, history, Black history, you know, way back when. But, you know, feel free to talk about Black history with us, whether it is past, present, or future, because we know that we are certainly involved in all areas. And usually, and by the way, you can certainly reach out to us and give us a call at 516-418-5894. Again, 516-418-5894. You can send us an email to etiquetteladies@gmail.com. We'll be glad to share your message. And I do know that this is a holiday weekend. A lot of people are traveling, having a wonderful time. It's President's Day tomorrow, so there are a lot of people that are traveling and on the move, and we certainly do understand that as well. And happy, safe travels if that is the case. I do want to start by talking about how usually when I do this show every year, somebody sends a message, at least one person sends a message, and they want to know how was it that February was deemed Black History Month when it is the shortest month of the year. So I've always received questions about that. So I do want to, you know, just kind of go over a little bit why, and I've actually received a message after the show was posted this evening on why. And Sarah, thank you for sending that. And it was just why, why only February? And so I just, let me just kind of go over and detail that out a little bit. Of course, with Black History, and of course, you know, it's that time of the year where, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, Black History Month and the culture and society or whatever. But of course, you know, when this time of year comes around, you know, many people rush to just start thinking or concentrating, if you will, on famous historical figures that we've heard of, you know, quite a bit, like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Of course, you know that he stood up, for those of you that may not know, he did stand up for Black communities in times of trouble. Rosa Parks, of course, you know, you may have heard of her, and she basically positioned herself, you know, to be equal with others despite her race by, you know, refusing to give up her seat. And, you know, when you're just kind of thinking about, there's so much Black history, you know, because it's just so much. As I said earlier, you know, 365 days. But Black History Month all started with Carter G. Woodson. And Woodson was one of the first scholars to study the history of the African diaspora, and including African-American history at Harvard University, the University of Chicago, and Berry College. According to the NAACP, Woodson authored numerous scholarly books on the positive contributions of Blacks to the development of America, and also published many magazine articles analyzing the contributions and roles of Black Americans. And he believed in the values of equality and representation, forming basis first in his fraternity, which was Omega Psi Phi. His message was simple. You know, Blacks need to take pride in their heritage, and other Americans need to acknowledge it. And, of course, after years of advocacy for a month dedicated to Black history, he made ends meet and started the first celebration and dedication to the Blacks around America. Many people say February, the shortest month, was chosen for Black History Month for reasons of prejudice. However, that is not the case. So on February 7, 1926, Dr. Carter G. Woodson and the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History announced the second week of February to be Negro History Week. Historians say Woodson chose this week to dedicate it to life-changing people for the Black community because it coincided with the birthdays of Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln. With this establishment, Negro History Week later turned into Black History Month after getting the extremely hard approval of the white supremacy society in the 1930s. The first celebration of Black History Month took place at Kent State 1 year later, from January 2nd to February 28, 1970. Today, people recognize Carter G. Woodson as the father of Black history. And, you know, many of you may not have known that. People should pay their respects to the hard work and dedication of the Black race despite the many conflicts of the world. Black leaders and everyday citizens to be acknowledged for their intense work towards society. Now, although arguments about having the shortest month of the year dedicated to Black history bring disagreements, it's important to take the time to thank someone for everything they have done today. And oftentimes we don't really hear that story. We don't hear that at all. But you know, we know who to really thank for, you know, working so hard to make sure that this was pushed. In case you are just joining us, you are listening to What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show. We're talking and celebrating Black History Month, and you can certainly join the conversation if you'd like by calling 516-418-5894. 516-418-5894. And, you know, you can talk about Black history past, present, future. If you want to talk to us about, you know, inventors, just whatever is on your heart and your mind this evening, you are certainly invited to share But I certainly did want to go ahead and take the time to give you a little backstory, if you will, a little background history on why actually the February has been the targeted date for Black History. And it's so important, even, you know, there's a lot of controversy, of course, going on in the school systems about, you know, whether or not truth should be taught, or and certainly, you know, about the racism situation. And I know if you listen to any kind of news, you've heard that, and calling, you know, particular attention to the state of Florida, because, you know, you would have to be living under a rock to not understand or to have heard about what's going on as far as trying to debunk, if you will, you know, a lot of the Black History programs. And it's you know, it's pretty unfortunate, but it is what it is. But talking about in the schools, I want to talk to you about, I want to share with you the first Black teacher. And the first Black teacher, her name was Susie King Taylor. And Susie lived from 1848 to 1912. Now, she was the first Black teacher to teach openly in a school for former slaves. She was born as a slave on a plantation in Georgia and later lived with her grandmother, who was influential in her education. Susie learned from a variety of teachers, including her grandmother, playmates, and white youth who challenged the laws and social customs that forbade the education of Black slaves in Georgia. Susie was not the first African American to begin teaching. However, before her time, it was illegal to teach slaves, and Susie attended an illegal school taught by a freed slave named Miss Woodhouse. Teachers like Mrs. Woodhouse educated others despite the danger to themselves. But by 1862, when Miss Taylor was teaching her students, she was the first teacher who was able, openly and legally. Okay, and that was in 1862. Now, Susie King Taylor was also the first Black Army nurse to serve in an all-Black regiment during the Civil War, where her husband was serving. After she published her memoir about the war, Reminiscences of My Life in Camp with the 33rd United States Colored Troop, late 1st South Carolina Volunteers, she became the first African-American teacher in Savannah, Georgia, where she taught children during the day and adults at night. Now, how about that? You know what? We are certainly going to applaud her for that. I don't know about you, but I actually had not heard of her before, and she is certainly absolutely worth, you know, mentioning. And again, her name, in case you want to look her up, further, her name is Susie King Taylor, okay? And, of course, she was the first Black teacher as well as the first Black Army nurse, you know, to serve in an all-Black regiment during the Civil War. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. And then there was a few other teachers I do want to make mention of, which was Robert Louis Gilbert, who was the first Black teacher to be hired in a white school. And you know, Gilbert discusses how he felt nervous about teaching white children, but when he began teaching, he detected that there were some geniuses, some average and some mediocre whites, just as there were blacks. That's Robert Louis Gilbert. And, of course, Maggie Washington, after schools began hiring black teachers, Maggie Washington took steps to encourage integration with white coworkers. She recounts, even the custodian tried to give me a hard time. A lot of teachers were so disgruntled that they were working with a black teacher that they went. Washington continued to teach her favorite subject, social studies, and positively influenced her fellow teachers, as well as her students and their parents. Absolutely. Is that interesting or what? Harriet L. Smith was the first black teacher in the Boston public school system. She taught at the Sharp School on Beacon Hill from 1890 until 1917, where she taught at the Bowdoin School. Just amazing. And I'm so interested in talking about teachers because we do know what's going on, in many of the school systems, again, when it comes to black history. But I tell you, I was listening to a program and with the U.S. Census reports, we're talking about schools, that the number of families choosing to homeschool have jumped in every group. The U.S. Census noticed that one group in particular stood out, and that group was the black homeschooling community in Birmingham, Alabama. And I want to commend these two parents, these two moms, Yolanda Chandler and Jennifer Duckworth. They're the two mothers that lead this particular group. And the youngest, because the youngest son of one of the moms was a victim of racism in kindergarten and in first grade. And so she decided at that time, look, okay, this is not going to, I'm not going to allow, you know, this to break this child's spirit. So what they decided to do is to create a safe space for brown and black children to learn. And, you know, again, not to mention, you know, a lot of the schools have been told to stop teaching the truth about racism in America. And to date, there are 23 schools that we can actually add to that list. I am going to bring on my co-host this evening, and I'm glad he could make it. Pastor Williams, how are you?
Fine. Just fine, Donna. Forgive me.
Happy
for
Sunday
being,
to you.
Tardy, but here I am.
Oh, no worries. Happy Sunday. Happy Sunday. So we're talking about, were you familiar with any of those teachers? Especially the first black teacher. Had you heard of her before by any chance?
No, I haven't. No.
Yeah.
This is the first time. In that particular career group, I suspect that there are many who could claim to be the first in their particular area, depending upon where they happen to be located,
mm-hmm.
by virtue of the fact that employment, especially in teaching, was limited to such a great degree, especially in the South, but even in other areas. I can remember when the first bus driver or worker or employee for the streetcar line in San Francisco was hired, and how that created such a fervor among the white streetcar employees in San Francisco. But again, by virtue of the fact that so many career fields were closed to African Americans prior to 1950, let's say. I imagine there are a number, or a great number, of people who could say, I was the first to do such and such in a particular career field. And that's just the facts. That's just the facts of history. When you think about it, when you if you go back to 1940 in San Francisco, the only African Americans working in the downtown area were either janitors or elevator operators. And so when the various career fields opened up, there was a great number of people who could say, I was the first to work in this particular store, or I was the first to work in this particular field, because just by virtue of the racial balance in the United States, there were many positions that just were not open, not only in the South, but throughout the United States. And that's why I say you will probably find the list is inexhaustible because people in the 50s, 60s, and 70s had opportunities that were not given to their parents and ancestors. And so I think it's important that we take note of that, because I can think of circumstances in which I was the first African-American in a given setting when I entered school in 1936. In the particular school that I enrolled in, I was the first African American in that school and remained the first for the whole 7 years that I was a student in that elementary school, and that was in San Francisco, in the progressive state of California. But wow. By virtue of racial patterns in housing throughout the United States, there were situations in which blacks had limited access to participate, and that didn't change until after, I would say, probably the 1960s.
Wow. Absolutely amazing. And yeah, I know that you you certainly do have a background where, you know, you've experienced, you know, quite a bit. I call you a walking history book. That's what I call you. Because of all the information.
I think back to San Francisco, the circumstances in San Francisco. And I don't know of any other African American in my age group who studied classical piano in the 30s and 40s and in San Francisco. Yeah. And so when I would participate in a recital, teacher would have recitals every year. And when I participated in recitals, I would be the only African American in the students that were presented by the piano teacher. So that's why I say, if it were possible, if there was some way to seek out individuals who were the first in their particular field, I think it would be very surprising and illuminating, I think, to see that just by virtue of the social conditions that existed, that blacks were kept out of so many fields of endeavor in the early days of the country, that then to see when you do find out about it, you can see how that somebody had to be the first. And in many cases, those individuals are still alive today.
Wow. Interesting. Thank you so much for that. Guys, we're coming up again. That is really interesting. Definitely want to find out more information because I know you have a lot of information, and this is wonderful. Guys, we're going to, I see you on the line. We're going to go ahead and we're going to go take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back and start answering some of the calls that we have, and you certainly can secure your line as well, 516-418-5894, 516-418-5894. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Have you ever dreamed of becoming an author? You've wanted to write a book but are not sure of how to get started? Or perhaps you want to write a book but you hate writing. The truth is, most of us have information and testimonials inside of us that need to be shared. Did you know that reading about your story can possibly change the trajectory of someone's life for the good? People are waiting and needing to be guided, directed, inspired, and encouraged. And this can happen just from reading your story. CourteousPublications.com can help you write your book and get it out. We offer virtual workshops and one-on-one coaching sessions. And if you don't want to write it yourself, we can write it for you. For more information, go to CourteousPublications.com. That's CourteousPublications.com. CourteousPublications.com. Or you can send an email to CourteousPublications1@gmail.com. We help want-to-be authors write books. According to the American Diabetes Association, the strongest evidence for diabetes prevention comes from the Diabetes Prevention Program, or DPP, demonstrated that an intensive lifestyle intervention could reduce the incidence of type 2 diabetes by 58% over 3 years.
Hello, everyone. Do you want to be inspired and encouraged? Listen up. I want to tell you about a new and exciting book called My Forever Affirmations Book and Journal, Positive Thoughts for All Ages by Donna Paige Riley. Have you or someone you know ever struggled with low self-esteem or self-worth? Been bullied? Felt like giving up on something that seems too hard to accomplish? Get nervous about taking a test for school? Feel like quitting? Feel self-conscious? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you will want to purchase a copy of My Forever Affirmations Book and Journal. My Forever Affirmations is a book and journal of quick, to the point, powerful, encouraging, positive thoughts and poems that will keep you encouraged no matter your age or what you're facing. There's also room to write your personal thoughts. We all need to be encouraged in positive ways, don't we? After reciting these affirmations, you are sure to feel good or better about yourself. You will be encouraged. Hurry, order now. Copies are limited. Go to www.amazon.com, type in My Forever Affirmations by Donna Paige Riley. Again, go to www.amazon.com, type in My Forever Affirmations by Donna Paige Riley, and secure your copies. You'll be so glad you did.
Welcome to ProMixGlobal.com. ProMix Global will help solve your audio recording and production needs, whether it's song recording, mixing and mastering, CDs, commercials, IVRs, audiobooks, or general voiceovers. ProMix Global is the choice for you. Your project will be delivered on time and on budget. For additional information or to schedule your studio time, go to www.promixglobal.com. ProMixGlobal.com. Once again, www.ProMixGlobal.com.
You are listening to What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show. You may join the conversation by calling 516-418-5894 or email your questions or comments to MissDonnaSpeaks@gmail.com. Now back to the show.
Happy to be celebrating Black History Month, and we're glad that you are happy too. So look, you can join the conversation, 516-418-5894, and I see you on the line, guys. I'm going to identify you by the last four digits in your phone number, and you will know that I am referring to you, okay? The first is 8613, last four digits. Hello. Hello, 8613. Okay, all right. We're going to keep moving. We'll try to see if we can circle back if we do have time. And guys, try to be ready if you want to share your comments. Try to be ready when I come to you, okay? The next one is 4953, the last four digits. And the phone number is 4953. Hello.
You know what you call Black history is American history. People talk about the first. There's a publication by a woman by the name of Julia Walker called Black Entrepreneurs or Black Businesses from 1600 through 1865.
Mm-hmm.
And starting off in 1600, you had Blacks that had all sorts of businesses from transportation, shipping, mining, restaurant tours. Matter of fact, George Washington ate in a very eloquent Black restaurant. Even during the Revolutionary War, you had another Black gentleman that was producing a major component, the gunpowder that he sold to both sides in the Civil War. I hear people say that Blacks wasn't allowed to go to school. And probably you did have some of these instances that went on in isolated places. But you had about 20 scientists that participated in the Manhattan Project, which produced the atomic bomb that was dropped on the Japanese Empire in the 1940s. Now, these people was in their 40s and 50s, so that means they had to go to school back in the 1920s to become nuclear physicists, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, and so on. And a lot of the hype that we hear. Yeah, a lot of the hype that we're hearing today about, like in Florida, that they don't want Black history to be taught, that's just not true. In many states, like Missouri, for instance, the state statutes say that your curriculum, textbooks, and instructional material can be whatever you want it to be. You know, in the St. Louis region, I put it up tall office buildings, 20 and 30 feet tall, 30 stories tall. I'm not in Black history, and I probably was the first Black to do such things. So, it's, you know, they write about what they want to write and who they want to write, which is perfectly fine, but a lot of things are completely carried away.
Yeah.
And you know what's
so
a travesty today, ma'am? You know what's a travesty today? is that you have so many black students in these public schools, like in Baltimore, in Chicago, in St. Louis, they
mm-hmm.
can't read. They can't
True.
Read.
True.
So
True.
How are they going to read the history even if they were presented to them? And that there to
that's
me is
a problem.
Should be.
Yeah.
It, you're absolutely
it
right. It's a more, they can't read and can't do math, so they can't be functional in society. And that gets to be a national security issue also.
Well, let me say this to you, and thank you so much for your comments. You're right. It's not so much that they're trying to stop black history. It's more so it's just stop teaching the truth about when it comes to racism in America. That's, I think that is the major issue that's going on in a lot of the states, especially the 23 states that the two parents, the two moms that actually started this group, the black homeschooling community in Birmingham.
Well, yeah.
And, yeah.
People at home
and that's something.
Teach their children whatever they want. But you can't have biased teaching going on in public schools, if that's what you want to call it. And it is biased. Because many times they talk about slave plantation, but they never talk about the black slave plantation owners who owned black slaves.
Yeah, Pastor Williams, let me get your feedback on this. Oh, yeah, I do. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm sure Pastor Williams has some comments about that,
well,
too.
Well, I would say again, I mean, the opening statement that black history is American history, there is a true bit. I think that, but historically...
Pastor, you're kind of going in and out a little. Pastor Williams?
Yeah.
I want to make sure everyone can hear you clearly.
Yeah.
You're going in and out a little bit.
The opening statement that black history is really American history, yes, that is true in terms of because it's a part of what's going on in America, and whatever goes on in America is a part of American history. But for such a long time, blacks have been excluded from having their achievements publicized, and so when that happens, someone wants to say, "Oh, well, we got to give recognition of that now," as we look back and see that, in fact, that took place many years ago, because there was a systematic practice of excluding what blacks did in their particular area of employment or their occupation or whatever it may be. And so I don't know of any other name to give it, but I can remember back in the 30s and 40s when we had Negro History Week. And that is when they would give credit to what Negroes had done in that particular area and throughout the United States. And then eventually that evolved into what we have today of Black History Month. So again, by virtue of what has happened in the past, it has mandated that people take some approach or institute some kind of program whereby the world can be informed that of what blacks have done in these respective fields throughout the United States. And again, it all goes back to the fact that by virtue of their color, African Americans were excluded from many opportunities to engage in various forms of business and art and the whole hear what you're saying,
you
there.
And I want to get in. Thank you for your call. I have some other callers I want to get in before we run out of time. And, guys, I see your messages that you send me. I'm going to try to read those and share those as well. But, sir, thank you so much for taking time out to call and share this evening, okay? And, guys, here I'm coming to you of your phone number. You'll know that I'm referring to you, okay? And it's 0139. 0139. Hello? 0139. Okay, they could be just listening. I will try to circle back if time allows us to do that. 2284, last four digits, 2284. Hello? Okay. All right. They may be just listening. I do want to read some messages that I have received here, and I thank you all when you take the time to do that. Dear Ms. Donna, thank you for doing this show and spotlighting Black History Month. I want to spotlight my daughter, Sadiq, who is an attorney and single mom to four kids. I pitch in to help her when I can, but she certainly deserves to be highlighted. And thank you. This comes from Kelly from Alpharetta, Georgia. Kelly, thank you so much for sending that in. And absolutely congratulations out to your daughter, Sadiq, who is a single mom to four kids. Absolutely. I do have another one, let me see, that I would like to read as well here. It says, Dear Ms. Donna, I really enjoy your show, and I also believe we should celebrate our history. 365 days per year, I don't really understand why Black people were only given 28 days, and I believe it is a shame. Black people have invented so many products, the stoplight, vacuum, and so many other things. I also believe that Black history should be studied in school. Thank you for allowing me to share my thoughts. This comes from Thelma Young in Detroit. Thelma, thank you so much for sending that. I certainly do appreciate that. And Thelma, I hope you were able to hear the very beginning of the show, because I went through a little bit of the backstory about why February, which, yes, it is the shortest month, but why that particular month was designated. And, guys, any of you, if you kind of tune in a little later in this show, then no worries, you will be able to go back and you will be able to listen to the show in its entirety, as they all do archive. So certainly go back and listen to a little bit of that backstory of why February. And generally, yes, I do, Pastor, you can probably remember, too, every show that I've done during Black History Month, someone definitely poses that question, why is it, you know, that we celebrate, or why was this particular month designated for us to celebrate when it is the shortest month of the year? So guys, yeah, go back and certainly take a listen to that backstory. It's very, very interesting. And Pastor Williams, I wanted to just kind of get an idea of you know, any other thoughts you may have at this particular time when it comes to celebrating or highlighting, if you would, Black History Month. And I wanted to also kind of mention a couple of entrepreneurs, if you will, that we may, well, some of us may know and may not.
I understand the views that some would have about, well, why is it necessary, or why is it necessary? Because what blacks do is part of American history. But so long, for so long, but the fact remains that for so long, the achievements of African Americans in general, certainly there's always exceptions, but for so long, they were excluded from many aspects of our society in various fields. There were certain fields that were just closed to them. So that when we have the opportunity to acknowledge those who overcame the barriers and were able to make these significant achievements, that it certainly is, I feel, worthy of the effort, and they should be applauded. So I can think specifically about my time in the Army. And when you look at the history of the U.S. Army, first of all, the first thing that pops out is that it was segregated from its inception up until 1954. And just by virtue of that policy, many blacks did not have the opportunity to achieve the goals that are open to them now. And what the history does, it acknowledges those people who were pioneers in a particular field and how they overcame the barriers that existed in their time period. And that, I feel, becomes an encouragement and an incentive to others to pursue their dreams, to pursue the fields of endeavor that they have an interest in, and that they recognize that they may not have those barriers now, but 50 years ago, those barriers were in place. And so we are grateful that they have been removed, and that equal opportunity and equal employment is certainly more achievable now than it was 50 years ago. But that is part of our history. And so I think those who were the pioneers deserve to be applauded for their efforts in their respective fields.
Absolutely. And I agree with you, because when you are, you know, you're pretty much shut out, or you're closed out, you know, of areas. First of all, it's a shame, you know, and that was the major issue, is that, because I know with females especially, pretty much the areas of employment mainly were nursing and teaching, correct? Those were pretty much the two major.
On a general statement, yes. There were probably more opportunities nationwide. Now, and that was especially true in the South, because the schools and the hospitals were segregated. So there had to be a means to provide the necessary nurses and the necessary teachers to support the segregated schools and the segregated hospitals. And so that's why I would say those two areas were the earliest to broaden and the earliest to attract people who had the schooling who had the education in order to advance in those particular fields. When you make a survey of African Americans who were in the workforce in the 40s, 50s, and 60s in the South, I dare say you're going to find that a large percentage of the women especially were either nurses or school teachers. Because there had to be somebody to serve in the they were the ones that had the opportunity to do so.
Right, absolutely.
That is especially true for Atlanta. When you talk to people who were in the workforce in the 40s and 50s, how many women do you encounter, African-American women now, who are retired, were school teachers because of the need to provide that, and they had the opportunity to go to segregated colleges, the historical black colleges in the South, and in order to achieve the necessary education in order to qualify as a teacher or a nurse. People who are, I say a lot, but you just take the average person now here in 2023, they can't even, well, they have no knowledge, but I would say they can't conceive of the fact that those were the only areas of employment for African American women who had college degrees in the South was to be a teacher. And so that the circumstances dictated that people rise to the occasion, and that's what happened in the South especially, and why there's such a large number of African American people in the school systems even today, because the predecessors were the ones that segregated school systems throughout the South. And wherever there was a segregated school, and that there were some states, border states, to also practice that. And so that dictated and shaped the need for African Americans to work in those particular fields.
And that's the main reason that I certainly wanted to do this show, and we will continue. We're actually going to continue next week because we did not get a chance to cover other areas. But that's one of the main reasons, is to call attention, because a lot of, like you said, in 2023, you know, people may find it, you know, really difficult to believe, you know, what has occurred prior to now or prior to, you know, 20 years ago or 30 years ago. That's why it's so important, especially for our young people, to really understand and comprehend, you know, what the road has been like to get to the place where, you know, you can look at all, you know, such an array of different types of whether you of careers, you know, whether you are, you know, you're wanting to be a pilot, whether you're an entrepreneur. I mean, there's so many different choices, but it hasn't always been that way. And guys, you're gonna lose us if you're streaming live in about 50 seconds. I will be going ahead doing the wrap up, but you certainly will be able to go back and listen to the show in its entirety. But that is one of the main reasons that I certainly want to do the shows, you know, on this platform that I do, especially, and you know, so we can, you know, encourage and inspire and uplift and educate as well. It's just so important. And again,
let me add to this, Donna, again,
sure,
that, you know, it's difficult to even conceive that a majority of positions in the whole workforce in the 1940s were just automatically excluded. And there wasn't anything in writing. But I'll say outside of the South, there wasn't anything in writing, but there was a general practice that you didn't hire Negroes. And if you went, and even though you may have been educated or had the necessary education to fill in that, to meet that particular job position, you may go up there and put your name, fill out the questionnaire and hand it to one of the employees, and And then the answer would be, well, we don't hire Negroes. That was the end of it. There was no law against that. There was no outcry in the community or in the nation against that. But it was a fact. And even, and I say this, even in California in the 40s and 50s, discrimination was statewide. You had no guarantee that just because you had a college degree or you had a high school diploma that you could go in and get a job of your choosing. Because any boss could just say no. I don't want any Negroes. And that was the answer. And so that's what then brought about the equal opportunity laws to overcome that, so that nowadays it's basic, I would say, it's understood that people, so in fact, it's in writing. It's in writing now. People cannot be discriminated against cannot be refused employment based on their among other things. But that was the first category that was addressed with the federal government got into this issue of equal opportunity. And so as a result of that, we can say that, yes, there were African Americans who became first in their particular field of endeavor due to the shift in racial attitudes that occurred beginning with the Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s. The whole attitude of the country began to shift, recognizing that this was a form of discrimination and we shouldn't have that. But before that time, there wasn't any newspaper articles pointing out that African Americans couldn't get a job. Nobody cared, and that has contributed to the fact that those individuals who became first in their particular field, they overcame those odds given a particular set of circumstances, and therefore we acknowledge that and we commend them for their efforts. They set the stage for those who are following now. And therefore, I believe that they are due their recognition.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And, it's just grateful that it's come a ways. And that's by no means saying that racism does not exist, because a lot of people – and I'm sure people may be thinking, it's in writing and everything, but still, I agree, because I've dealt with some organizations that, have maybe not as blatant, but, kind of a little subdued a little bit, but we know what the situation really is. But as far as law, being stated in writing that, it's wrong, and it's always been wrong, and it's what is really interesting to me is that how so many people over the last few years have just like, wow, did that really happen? It did. And some of it is still happening. I can recall that in, I guess it was, 79 or 80. I remember I used to model. Now, I'm not from Georgia. I'm from the Midwest. And I can recall walking into a modeling agency for an agent and just being told, you know, we really don't have work for black models. And I was like, okay. And so I'll never forget, it was the third, there were like three agencies there. It was the third one I remember I went to, and I had my portfolio, you know, and the headshots, and, you know, your whole book. And so I walk in, and I'll never forget this real just tall blonde lady. She looked through my book, and she said, oh, well, hon, I'm sorry, but we just don't have that much work for black models. And I looked at her. I said, okay, so then I'll take the work that you do have for black models. And so I shocked her, and I shocked myself as well. And so, and really, I still say to this day, you know, that was God speaking through me, because normally I just, you know, closed my book and turned around and walked out. But that one time, and I shocked her, and she just kind of looked at me, and she told me to have a seat, and she went back, you know, back into her office, and she was there for probably 5 minutes. She was probably trying to get over the shot. But when she came back out, and she had prepared, I signed a 2-year exclusive contract with this agency. And so sure enough, you know, she was, you know, very truthful with what she said, because everything I did during the course, you know, over those 2 years, I was the only black model. So she was, you know, she was right. But, you know, like I said, okay, give me the work that you do have. I'll take that. How about that? And so, yeah, talking about just kind of blatant right in your face. And I'm thinking, wow. So, you know, only have we really come a long way over what, maybe the last 10 years, 15 maybe, tops. But, you know, these situations, you know, still exist. So not trying to pretend in any way that racism is still not an issue. It's an issue because it's a mindset. And so, you know, we still have a lot of people that are in that mindset. And unfortunately, that mindset of the adult, that trickles down to the children. And, you know, so there we are. So just praying that one day we can all really, really honestly and genuinely live Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream. You know, about, you know, the content of the character and not necessarily, you know, the color of the skin. But yes, we've come a long way, and but we still have a ways to go. But it's so important that we're all, you know, aware of it, and we do talk about it and discuss it. So next week, guys, we're going to do a part two, we're going to, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, some entrepreneurs. We're going to talk about media people. I mean, it's just so we're in every area, you know. We've invented so many things. And a lot of people just don't know. A lot of people just don't know. So that's why we come to you each week and share. So I do want to say, Pastor Williams, thank you so much. I appreciate you co-hosting with me, and I appreciate you sharing because, you know, like I said before, I know that, you know, you have a lot of wisdom, and you definitely have a lot of wisdom as well in this particular area. So I knew that you would be a great co-host for this.
Well,
and so,
let me close with this final word. This struck home in my family. Because my father worked for the Southern Pacific Railroad as a red cap porter. And at that time in the Southern Pacific, there were no opportunities for African Americans to work in any other field than as porters. So you couldn't be a conductor, you couldn't be an engineer who ran the train. You couldn't be a conductor. The only position you could get if you applied at the Southern Pacific was to be a porter, regardless of your education. So, again, that's why I say, while there were no laws on the books that excluded people and supported racist policies such as that, it was a given. It was understood. And therefore, when you went to apply for a job, if you were applying for a job in which there were no openings for blacks, that was it. That was the end of the story. Nobody said, "I'm sorry." They just said, "No, we don't have any." And you went out the door and began looking for some place where you might get a job. And that's the reason why we can be amazed and we can applaud those people who persevered, and when they did have the opportunity, they took advantage of it and began to demonstrate that African Americans were equally prepared and capable of performing the same tasks that any white person could.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that, because, you know, I was going to say it is very important to note that we were not given that opportunity because of our skill level. You know, we were just, you know, weren't given the opportunity because that's what the white people felt, that, you know, you're going to do this or nothing else. Okay, so that's why I want to, another reason I wanted to return next week with a part two. We're going to kind of dig down a little bit further and talk about some other areas, because we have, you know, contributed and created so many different areas that a lot of people just don't know, and they will continue to be shocked as they find out. So we'll shock them with additional information on next week. Again, thank you so much, Pastor Williams. I appreciate you. Guys, thank you all for tuning in. I certainly do appreciate it when you guys, you know, take time out to contact us, whether you send us a message or you call. That's perfectly fine. And I certainly do appreciate it. If this is your first time joining us, thank you so much. Welcome to the What is Etiquette Anyway family. If you have a topic, an etiquette question, topic you'd like to hear us cover in the future, please be sure to let us know, and we'll see what we can do about addressing that topic. We appreciate it if you tell your friends and family about our show. Invite them to listen. After all, our goal is to make the world a polite place to live. We know we can only do this one person at a time. Never tire of loyalty and kindness. Hold these virtues tightly. Write them deep within your heart. And of course, that is one of my favorite proverbs. And that comes from Proverbs 3:3, rather. And I'm going to ask you to initiate a random act of kindness this week. And if you're intentional about it, I bet you can initiate at least one act of kindness per day, okay? And another thought I want you to just consider, why not consider being the peacemaker in the relationships that you have? So be the peacemaker in your group, okay? How about that? All right. Again, please join us. Tune in again next week. We're going to talk a little more about, we'll dive a little further into Black History Week, or Black History Month, if you will. Although, again, I have to always say that we do know that, you know, Black people are involved in making history 365 days out of the year. Okay. And yeah, you certainly didn't get a chance to reach out on today. We'll certainly invite you to do that next week, as we will continue this conversation. All right. Again, thanks so much for joining us this evening. We'll talk again next week. Good night. Take care, and God bless. Be safe.
Thanks for listening to What is Etiquette Anyway, the talk show. Please join us again next time as we will discuss another exciting topic.